Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.
Hello and welcome to Down at Third Man podcast. We've made it to double figures. We're on to episode 10 and still, by some miracle, we are online. We have not been taken down. We've annoyed a fair few Indian cricket fans now on top of the Aussies as well, but still not enough to get us taken down, so we're all doing pretty well in that regard. As always, we'd just like to say a big thank you to our sponsors, Woodstock Cricket. Remember, if you want to get some new kit for the season, get it ordered now because we're only a few weeks away. And of course, use our discount code because you may as well get yourselves 25% off while you're ordering. Right, tonight we've got a really good episode as always lined up. We've got with us the usual, shall we say, amazing Div 2 partnership that is Big Lens, Aid Lalo, and chairman and captain and dog's body himself, John O'Maskery. How are we, boys?
I don't think I've ever heard me and John have described as an amazing partnership.
Yeah, many things. I thought you were going to go down.
I think we batted together once when you said open up against Boston and I was out in the first over, I think.
It was a great day. Hey, I tell you what, it was a great idea. The idea was great.
I scored 8 off 4 balls and got out, made no messing. Thanks.
Put us together for a rapid start. We were 10 off 1. Then we were 10 for 2 off 2.
Don't know how it's mate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it worked to begin with, didn't it? And then with us also tonight, we've got another sort of North Staffs alumni and more famed now, I would say, for his Wisden Cricket Monthly writing, the club, Hall of Fame of club cricket, especially. I've been reading today's one from Yorkshire. That amazed me, some of the stats coming in that one. And that is Modishell and Alton's former skipper, Scott Oliver. How are we, Scott?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. We're just glad that some people still want to come on after the last few weeks and Jono absolutely ribbing me for insulting Steve Croft.
Steve took it in great jest, mate, and if Scott hangs up shortly after you starting to insult him indirectly, then we know where the issue is, Turner, really, don't we?
I'm pretty thick skinned. Let's see what you've got.
I thought you were going to say pretty thick then, and I thought that's don't tell him that because he'll be all
over. Well with us then.
just a big shout out to Steve Croft because he is going to put a few of our stickers on the back of his bats. He's promised us, so big thanks to Steve. He's going to be showing his support for cardiac risk in the young, and we'll chat a bit more about that later. The one thing I want to do though before we get into chatting about cricket is just give a big shout out to a local youngster who's going through a really, really hard time at the moment. He's had a rare form of bone cancer in his leg and a couple of days ago had to have an amputation. Now, he is an absolute top lad. I used to teach him and he is a brilliant kid. He's only 12, plays for Crewe Alex and Goals. He plays for Emmeath and he is just lovely lad. And he's been so brave. And the fact that he's took it all in his stride is amazing. So I'd just like to give a big shout out from us guys to Ashton Hume. And keep strong, mate, and keep battling on. And I'm sure we'll see you playing cricket again and football again soon. Right then, shall we go on to talking about some cricket?
Ah, go on then.
Yeah, I feel like we're yet another loosely cricket-based podcast, as tail enders would say. So I guess it's only fair we start off with our guest. So, Scott, obviously, locally people might know you from being the captain and playing for quite a good while at Modishell, or Modishell and Alton as it's now known. And people would also know you as being the cricket writer and also on Twitter as Reverse Sweeper. But how did you actually get into cricket to begin with? How did it all come about?
I guess the same way for a lot of people. I went to watch my dad. I went to the matches that my dad was playing in. I didn't think I watched much of it. I would have been 7, 8, 9. He was playing at Little Stoke. I eventually became the scorer of Little Stoke. I played under 18s there, actually, briefly. I've only got one memory of that, which is top edging the ball into my face against Modishull and being carried off the pitch.
We might laugh at that or not.
You can laugh, yeah, man.
You've done it now.
It's not even in the top 10 injuries, that one. Scoring kind of got... this sounds extremely sad, but like scoring kind of was the first time I sort of watched the game. And Tim, do you know Tim Tweets?
Yeah, Tweetsy.
Yeah, so Tweetsy's dad played. Alex Thorley's dad played there. Gordon, he was the first person who probably gave me anything like what I would call coaching, although it was pretty informal, just on the edge of the pitch, mainly teaching me to get in line, so bowling short stuff at me with a stump behind me and making me bat properly. And Tweetsy and I, we used to play like test series in the nets every Saturday, as you do when you're that age. It was quite funny to see Tim later on after his Derbyshire days. I actually played against him in a university match, but then didn't see him for ages. And then played against him a fair bit through the 2000s. And I remember when Tino Best made his debut for Leek, which is we were the first team to play against them, and they smashed 250 off not that many overs. And then Tino came absolutely barreling in. There was a gale behind him. He bowled quick, knocked over four wickets. I'm in at number six, 20 for four. And I had to walk through the slip cordon to get to the crease. And Tim is laughing. And he just said under his breath, "Tell you what, mate, he's fucking quick." And I said, yeah, I said, "No shit, mate, you're fielding closer to the boundary than you are to the stumps." And Tim was a big mucker for me back then. And then I just got into adult cricket and I played 1 year of twos, then was in the ones, and that was it. I was, yeah, played straight through till I had 2 years in Nottingham, 06, 07, then came back to Modishull for three more years, stopped for 3 years, and then sort of wound down in the twos, the A team. That was it. Yeah, pretty much.
Fair journey. Sounds good as well. A few names to recognise there for local cricket fans and followers. Now, obviously, we'll talk a bit more about Modishull and sort of playing cricket locally in a bit. But before that, obviously, now well known for your cricket writing. How did that come about? How did, obviously, always had a passion for cricket, but how did that transpire into them becoming a writer?
The truthful answer is that I fell into it because basically I've shambled through pretty much everything I've ever done. So I did a degree on the basis that it was the subject I enjoyed the most at school. I didn't have a plan for what I was going to do in life. I did a Spanish degree. I wasn't a very diligent student for the first 2 years. And then I went to Spain for a year, came back, and then all your mates have kind of graduated because it's year four for you and they've all gone. And so I got my head down. I got inspired enough that they offered me a master's. I did that, didn't know why. Then they offered me a PhD. So I did I kind of just kind of stumbled through it and it became a massive ordeal. And at the end of it, I was in no fit state to get a job as an academic. I mean, I just hadn't got the CV sorted. So I was kind of, okay, right, what next? This would be 2011. And the first thing I did was I contacted a local paper in Nottingham. No, not paper, it's like a cultural monthly magazine who had a kind of dormant sports section. So I met in the pub with the editor and he said, after about 10 minutes, he said, "Look, do you want to be the sports editor?" I said, "Yeah, okay, was that it? So, you know, do I have to show you I can actually do the job?" No, it's all good. And with that, I was able to go to Trent Bridge. That was the big thing there. So I started to go to Trent Bridge. I started to chat to Mick Newell a bit and try and kind of buttonhole famous players and see if I could interview them. And that would be the first sort of step. But I had no training as a journalist. You know, the conventional path for a journalist is to work on a local paper and then sort of see what happens from there. Do the hard yards. Like Travers, I've got maximum respect for him. He's a first-class reporter and journalist, just for the sheer volume of stuff he turns out and the amount of exposure he gives to North Staff's cricket is phenomenal, really. And and the weird thing was, right, the best story I ever sort of got my hands on was about 2 months into this. And I was not prepared. I was not ready. I didn't have the contacts, didn't know what to do with it. It was the story of Adrian Shankar. I don't know if you know this story. So in a nutshell, he basically blagged a contract at Worcestershire. Yeah. Right? He lied about his age and he invented a T20 tournament in Sri Lanka that didn't happen. Worcestershire bought it, offered him a deal, and then a week later it kind of emerged that, yeah, had they Googled the name of this tournament, they'd have found nothing on the internet. But he'd done it with a lot of hype, a lot of like message board stuff and random emails he was sending the county. Oh, I've seen this guy, Adrian Shankar, you know, batting in South Africa. He was brilliant. You should give him a trial and all of this. And Worcestershire just took a punt on him and offered him this deal. Now, I had that story, and if it had come to me about 12 months, 2 years later, I'd have probably like got it in the Times or the Guardian, but I didn't really know what to do with it. And I decided to share my information with George DeBell, who you may know as the Cricket Info's main England guy. Yeah. And then, yeah, it kind of went from there. And I got a lucky break with The Guardian the next year. I still don't know to this day how it happened, but they asked me to cover some county cricket. It was the best gig I ever had. Really good day rate. You know, just watching a county match all day, and then you have to write 600 words at the end of it. It's pretty easy, apart from when that report has to go in the paper and it has to be very tight. And from then on, that was the only real reporting job I've had. So reporting is very different to what I do. I do feature writing. So I just come up with ideas and pitch people and they say yes or no. And so that's it.
Sounds good. Sounds interesting.
That story, Scott, sounds like the one. Have you ever heard the story of Ali Deer, the guy who Southampton signed and played in the Premier League, having never seen him play before? Graham Souness took a punt on him because he said he was
George Weir.
Derek, yeah, someone's George cousin. Weir. George Weir's cousin. He's George Weir's cousin. Take a punt on his class. He bought him on for his debut at Highbury. He lasted about 14 minutes and he wasn't actually a footballer.
Yeah. Yes, so when George DeBell's report went online, when the story broke, he called him the Ali Deer of cricket. And the next morning, that sentence had been removed because Shankar's lawyers had objected to it. So Crick Info kind of took a step back and thought, okay, we'll wait for a minute. But it actually turned out to be much crazier than Ali Deer. And without trying to sort of punt something that I'm up to at the moment, but it's the 12-month anniversary in May of this story. And about 4 years later, some guy got in touch with me and he said he was involved with Shankar's bat manufacturer and sponsor around that time. Because Shankar had played for 2 years at Lancashire before, never played a first team game there. And he basically presented fraudulent documents to get the deal. And all this new material was about how he tried to get into the IPL the winter between Lancashire and Worcestershire. So this has never been out in the public domain. I've got it all and I'm just kind of turning it into the story at the moment. But having to like get lawyers sign off on various parts of it, because some of it's from private emails and some of it's from public stuff or stuff that was circulated in the company. So it's a bit of a ball ache, but it's a mad story. You know, the thing is with it, it's like, surely he must have known that the house of cards was going to come tumbling down at some point. I mean, like when you actually play, you know, that's the thing with sport. It's going to find you out at some point. Yeah. His sort of fantasy just kept on driving him on. Madness. And the funny thing is, well, he played for Worcestershire 2 games. He made a TV debut against Middlesex, bowled third ball. And I had a call from Nottingham saying, he's playing, you know, come and watch. I didn't have a Sky subscription, so I tried to get across town to watch this game, but he was out before I got there, and I was there for the second over. It was like bold, murder, naught. And then he made his county championship debut. So he played a bit of first class for Cambridge University. He was averaging 19. But if you take out 150 he got against Oxford Uni, and that shouldn't be a first class game anyway, his average was about 12. So he shouldn't be getting 2-year contracts at Lancashire with an average like that. So he's, yeah. But he played against Worcestershire and fielded for 5 sessions and then got in and dogged out 10 not out, 60 balls, and was not out overnight. And my mate phoned me, the guy who told me the story, said, "I bet you any money he doesn't resume his innings tomorrow." I was like, okay. And he explained that it had been when he was trialling for Lancashire, he'd feigned an injury on the car park so he didn't have to bat against Mitchell Claydon. So he could have played himself out of the contract sort of thing. Sure enough, he went down with an injury in the fielding warm-up and didn't bat again, because like he probably slept all night thinking, okay, Steve Harmison's going to be fucking charging in at me tonight. and I'm a guy who's averaging 12 in, yeah. So he didn't. And that was the day the story broke, and they investigated and sacked him. but not before he built a website purporting to cover this fake T20 tournament.
I was just going to say, that's what impressed me, that he went to the levels of... I remember reading that bit, that he'd made his own website to make up fake stats and put in like proper Sri Lankan players' stats to try and make out as if it was all legit. What fair? I mean, not fair play, because obviously there's a line to us, but fair play to him for the effort, I guess, if nothing else.
The thing was, on that website, he put 2 scorecards on of like fake teams, Colombo Reds and whatever. And I went through the 44 players, right? And about 28 to 30 of them were just generic Sri Lankan random names. Pereira, De Silva, you know, Fernando.
That he just arrived in a hire car, as the 12th man would say.
Yeah. And then out of the actual real cricketers, 11 or 12 of them were playing other matches on the day of those scorecards that he put in. So, yeah, just, mate, give it up. The house is surrounded. Come out with your hands in the air.
You know what I mean? That Colombo Reds then sounds like when you play Pro Evo when they can't afford the license for the real team names.
Manchester Reds.
Yeah, Manchester Reds.
Colombo Crew.
It was like, I've got to build a website in 16 hours. So moving on, I'm not going to sit here for 2 hours pondering what names to call it. So bosh it out, silly boy.
Mad.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's the writing.
I think we all now want to get ourselves an ECB press pass just so we can go watch some cricket, especially with no crowds at the moment. So going back to sort of your actual playing in cricket, obviously well known for being at Mod and ending up captaining Mod. What was it like to captain Mod and be captain in the Prem?
Yeah, I enjoyed the captaincy very much. But I would say there were different phases to it. You know, I think when you start out as a captain, you don't have any credit in the bank as a captain, and you have to sort of build your authority. And that's a process. It takes time. You know, I think you can get authority from performances, from leading from the front. But I don't personally think that that's the most important part of captaincy. I think you have to have a minimum sort of baseline of performance, otherwise your authority will ebb away. But I think the main thing is making good decisions. Certainly later on in your captaincy, and the more good decisions you make, the more your team buy into what you do. So you get to a point where it becomes kind of automatic. you don't worry too much about the egos of your players in the team, who you're upsetting. You deal with that after the game. But I think in the early days, you expend a lot of mental energy on the man management side of it. I got the captaincy in, I got it sort of chucked at me 6 games from the end of the 97 season, which was our first title. So, yeah, we got into the North Staff South Cheshire League in 1990. My first season was our last year in the North Staffs and District League. It took us 3 years to get promoted. We came straight back down. And then we signed as pro a guy called John Addison. I don't know if you know that name.
He's been mentioned to us by a couple of people who used to play with you at Modishall and stuff, who we spoke to. Said he was a good player.
So, yeah, he played England under-19s. He was on Leicester's staff for a bit. He was a Staffordshire regular. But he was the catalyst for Modishall's transformation, really, from a sort of backwater side in the country, playing North Saxon District, into we became a powerhouse for that period. And he was the, I would say he was the catalyst for that, not just as a player, but as a personality. So we played this lower standard cricket, and then we'd not had much success in our first foray into North Staff South Cheshire League. And he came along and he instilled confidence in people. He made us sort of aware of, you know, our potential, where we could get to as individuals, as a team. And he did it in a really genuine way. Like, I think the one lesson I learned from him as a captain was, be generous spirited with your players. It's one thing to think, oh, I think this lad's a good player, but go and tell him, and go and tell him in a credible, authentic way that is detailed. Like, it's not just I think you're good, which is wishy-washy and will just go over somebody's head, but explain why you think they're good, what their strengths are and where they can go with that. And he sort of did that with lots of talented players who were still rough around the edges. And slowly we became a really good side. So 94 and 95 we came third, didn't get promoted, should have done. 96 we smashed it. We won the league with a couple of 2-3 games left. We got to the Staffs Cup final that year. And he said, Addo said at the end of that season, we can go straight up and win Division 1, or 1A it was called then. We were like, mate, you're fucking off your head. You know, we'll settle for third bottom, basically. That was what we thought. And sure enough, we went up and no one had ever done this. Then I think Norton and Hales did it later. Maybe somebody else has done it since then. I don't know. But we won the first game against Stone, who were the reigning champions, and we got on a roll. And 6 games from the end of the season, he decided he didn't want to captain the team anymore because, you know, it was getting stressful because, you know, it started to look like it was a reality, whereas before it was kind of a bit of a pipe dream. And he needed to concentrate on his performance. So that was my first experience of captaincy, was those like 6 games to the end of that season. And it's a really easy time to captain, those 6 games, because everyone's hyper-motivated, more selfless than they normally are, you know, because you've all got that objective of winning the title, so people don't moan if they're not bowling or batting. And we got over the line, yeah. I could digress into a couple of stories there, but the penultimate game was the most tense game I've ever played in. It took us 64 overs to knock off 104. A lad called Guy Bulpit, who bowled very well for Staffordshire for quite a few years, he's a left-arm spinner, bowled fast left-arm spin. He bowled 32 overs, 6 for 25 or something like that on a Bunsen. And yeah, we knocked him off in the last over of the game, and with 7 balls left in that game, we still needed 11 to win, and Bulpit had got the last over, and there's no fucking way in this wide world we are getting 11 off that last over. So we had to hit a boundary, and our sort of least important player, if you like, our number 8 who didn't bowl, hit a 6, that ball, and it was, you could say, it's the most important shot in the history of our club. And then we scrambled the 5 runs off that last over with us a slog to deep mid wicket that the guy dropped, and it bounced about 20 yards off his chest, and they ran three, and then we got the run. And then we won the last game and got the title. So that would be what probably my second best moment in cricket. But the following year when I captained, it was very different. All of a sudden, I was the second or third youngest guy in the team again. It was a blank slate. And I felt a lot of resistance from the older players about some of the stuff I wanted to do. Thick-skinned enough and mature enough to deal with it all that well at the time. I kind of was impatient. I'd get ratty. So in the end, I finished that spell of captaincy, and I didn't do it again until 2004. So five years later, and I was older, and I'd got more credit in the bank from performance as a player by then. And the rest of the captaincy from that point felt very different. I mean,
obviously then you went on to sort of win the Prem again, and obviously you had some really good pros, and particularly I think the one that most people remember and know is obviously Imran Tahir. What was it sort of like in sort of the mid-2000s in the North Staff League before obviously it all changed in the last few years to how it is now? What was it like back then, and what was it like having someone who had the quality of Imran Tahir playing for you, who like still to this day is doing a pretty decent job when it comes to the PSL, the IPL?
Yeah. I mean, it's quite easy to captain when you've got Imran Tahir and your bowling attack. That's point number one. So we signed Imran for that 2004 season. he'd had 2 years at Norton in Hales, who, yeah, as I said, they came up and won it, and he got a load of wickets for them. But we'd beaten them four games out of four. We took 95 points off them, and he only got seven wickets in those four games. Not entirely sure how that happened. From my point of view, I couldn't pick him. I just slog swept and swept him, and got lucky with a few umpiring decisions when I shouldered arms at googlies that I hadn't picked. And that 2004 season, we were tipped to win the league, us or Longton, in the Sentinel pre-season thing. And we started shockingly. We had a young captain, a guy called James Cornford, who'd come to us as pro 3 years before, stayed as a sort of coach, junior coach, and he got the captaincy. Four games into that season, it was mutiny. We'd lost three, drawn one, and the senior players wanted rid of him. And we'd organised a meeting, actually, to get rid. I wouldn't have been able to attend because I lived in Nottingham, but he jumped before he was pushed. So that's when I got the captaincy back. And that first year with Imi, we stabilised in the league, but we got to both cup finals, Staff's Cup, Talbot Cup, two very different days. The Talbot Cup final, I kept wicket, and I didn't enjoy keeping wicket at all. We were short of keepers. I'd been to a wedding in Cambridgeshire the day before. I'd woken up with a raging hangover, had to get across the country. I got to Audley 20 minutes before the start of the game. I dragged my kit into the dressing room, didn't even have time to get changed. The bell went, we tossed up, lost the toss. I'm out there. Sean Price teed off, got him in front of the game. Imi's on, bowling at TP Singh, left-hander, good player, can't pick his googly either. Imi was supposed to give me a signal when he bowled a googly. I can't remember whether it was tugging his jumper or scratching his bowling mark. And at some point,
you say scratching his bollocks then.
At one stage, when he was scratching his bowling mark, he was doing it like a cartoon bull getting ready to charge. I said, mate, I think that's a bit too obvious. I am watching you closely, just very subtly scratch your mark, mate. I'll be ready. So anyway, in the middle of this game, hangover, we're behind the game, I'm keeping wicket, I fucking hate it. Imi does TP Singh with three googlies and two overs. They all go for four byes. Two of them are missed stumpings. Fucking gasket gone from me. And yeah, they got too many runs and we're never going to knock them off. But we won the Staff's Cup that year. That was the first, that was a big moment for me as a captain, big moment for us as a team. We'd lost two Staff's Cup finals before that. We'd lost the year before, and I won man of the match in the game, but ended up getting arrested and spent the night in Longton Police Station. So I just got very pissed. I forgot to eat all day, which sometimes happens when you play a big game, and hit the wall in the car park of some pub. I just went outside for fresh air, and next thing I know, I'm in Longton Nick with clothes in a bag, no money, no phone. Had to phone my mum because of the only I couldn't go on public transport because I was wearing an anti-suicide suit that you can't rip and hang yourself with. So, yeah, the last time she'd seen me was me getting this tankard for Man of the Match in the Staff's Cup final. And the next time she saw me, she was picking me up from Longton Nick with a fucking bag full of sick clothes. But so, yeah.
The story is just taking a completely, utterly bizarre and exciting turn. It's all of a sudden gone from winning a local cricket competition to 24 hours in police custody,
It wasn't 24 hours. It was about 8, I would say. And the funny thing is, the duty sergeant was an ex-Modishall player as well, who had played 10 years within the 90s, but that's another thing. So, yeah, 2004, we won it finally. Third time lucky. Good day at ME. Kind of tough game, but the last five overs, we knew we'd won, so we were able to really relax and enjoy those moments, and it kind of salvaged what would have been a shit season. 05, we had a right battle with Longton, who were our massive, massive rivals over that period. It was like properly fiery games. And Immy was, you know, he was a total fucking genius, really. But he overbowled his variations, if I'm going to be hypercritical, at that stage. He was still only 25. And I actually heard that Martin van Jaarsveld, who was his captain in state cricket in South Africa, would take him off if he bowled too many googlies per over. I didn't really have that luxury, you know. So I can't really, you know, punish him for that. But it did piss me off a little bit. But the season where it all came together, and this is my greatest memory in cricket, and it shows what a legend Imran was. So 04, 05, 05 is my worst memory. And yeah, we got dicked by Longton, having led all season, and they were our major rivals, and we went to their ground, third last game, and they fucking smashed us. Did a job on us, prepared an Immy-proof pitch, green, hard. I fucked up at the toss. I should have batted first, really. We led by 17 points, and what I should have done is stop them getting 25. I said, right, if we get 4 points from this game, we it's in our hands for the last two matches, but I didn't. They bowled us. We were 20 for 8, chasing 190 at one stage. We got to about 50 or 60. But it was a fucking, like, fist in the face of a power team. The best team I played against in club cricket was Longton 2005 team. Quality, 1 to 11. So those were the first 2 years with Immy. And then both of us went away for 2 years. And then 2008, we came back and we were fucking nowhere near the best team in the league, but we got on a roll, and the only time I ever had any problem with Immy was in that game against Tino Best. Actually, it's only a murmur of a problem. It was a gale blowing down the ground, as I said. They're like, I don't know, 80 off the first 10 overs. The wheels are coming off. We had a shit bowling attack. The players from 06, 07, about five of them had left, and we were down to one prop senior bowler, Sean Bryan, and Imran, and then we're fiddling around for bowlers. This is not an attack that should win the league. So I had to get Imran to bowl into the wind and give the wind to, like, our club bowlers to try and do something about Rob King, Tim Tweets, Dave Wealdon, who were just smashing it everywhere. And Immy bowled some full bungers into the wind, and he snatches jumper off the umpire, says, fucking hell, Scott, I'm not a league bowler. So I took him off, ignored him for about five overs, and then kind of quietly said, Immy, when you're playing for us, you are a league bowler. And we left it at that. And he apologised later. And that was honestly in 3 years, 80, 90, 100 games, the only thing we had. That season, we didn't win for about 6 weeks. Then we just won week after week after week, 25, 25, 25, 25. We exploited the rules, 60-50 rules. You know, we'd bat first, get 200. Immy was going to bowl half the overs. We were playing on the scruffiest fucking pitches you can imagine. At the same pitch week after, like, every game until, like, mid to late July, we played on the same pitch every match at home. And it was so bad when we played Longton that Dave Edwards had to go round the wicket to open the bowling because the foothold was bad. And, like, I was borderline embarrassed about it, but I felt, fuck it, you got to do what you got to do. That's the resources we had. You know, 05 when Ian Carr was with us and stuff, Immy didn't open the bowling then, you know, we shared it around. But now it was like, right, okay, Immy, win us the match kind of thing. And... But he signed for Hampshire, right? Just as everything was going great and we were this underdog team that was going to win the title, he signs for Hampshire and it's kind of, fuck, that's it, we're fucked. And they tried to stiff us a bit, actually, with they didn't want to give us compensation, so it was a bit of kind of back and forth with them and we were never going to stop him, but... We wanted them to give us some money so we could get a decent sub. And Imran, in the middle of all this, he says, look, Scott, I've looked at the fixtures. I can play five of the last eight games. Don't get a permanent sub. We'd got Hafiz lined up, actually. Good player, but he's not Imran Tahir in club cricket. But, you know what I mean? And when we had Harath the following year, whose test career was ridiculous in the end, Harath was nowhere near as good a league bowler as Imran. So, yeah, Immy played these games, driving up from Southampton at fucking whatever o'clock on a Friday night, playing for us, then driving to Taunton or wherever he was playing the Sunday match. And we stayed in front. And the last game of that season was probably my best innings of my life. And we played Little Stoke. I've got a story about Gaz Morris in this, but I probably shouldn't say it because it's not very political. I'll tell you what happened. So it pissed down. The ground was fucking saturated. We tried to mop it up. It wasn't going anywhere. So about 9 o'clock in the morning, we looked at the league rules. So like, what's the smallest ground you can play on? It said 40 yards from the middle of the wicket. So we measured that out and then we just concentrated the drying in there. And there was fucking lakes outside of that. I mean, proper lakes. And it wasn't really fit to start, let's be honest. It wasn't. It was fucking... You could have basically grown rice in the outfield. But we played. And before the game, I said to Bratty, Nick Bratt, their captain, said, Bratty, give us this toss today and I'll give you both tosses next year. So we needed 5 points to guarantee the title. People were saying, oh, well done, boys. You know, you're there. It's like, mate, we're not there because if we play on a fucking shit heap, we could get rucked for 70 and then we're going to need to bowl them out to win the league. So, and that's pretty much what happened. Dan Colclough, in one of his first games or, you know, first season, 17 years old, knocks our first five over for 20. And I went in and for some reason, I just had a weird calmness about me. It probably helped that Gaz Morris and Richard Harvey were playing for them, who I'd grown to kind of associate with Longton. And I just thought, right, fuck this. This is not going to happen. I made 70. We got 125, 3 points. I've never celebrated 125 before, but I fucking punched the air that day. So we needed 4 wickets to wrap it up. Imran's playing. We got a 40-yard boundary. We got 2 quick wickets and then Richard Harvey started bunting Imran over this mini boundary for sixes and like getting to about 60, 70 for two. And then a lad called Simon Hemmings for us, who stopped playing a long time ago now.
He still takes part in our charity day, I see it, charity day once a year. He's a decent decent bowler for someone who hasn't played in years. I'll give him that.
He was a good player, good bat then. He took one of the fucking best catches you would ever see, a full length, one handed Superman catch at mid off to get Harvey out. And then Imran took, so we needed one more wicket, and it was Dan Hancock, and he bowled him a googly all over Red Rover. Immy goes off on a fucking 100-yard dash, as you've seen him do. All of us lot chasing him. He's running through puddles and all sorts. So that was fucking delirium. And yeah, just like the devotion and loyalty to see that job through. Like, he could easily have said, you know what, I'm a Hampshire player now, good luck lads for the rest of the season, but he didn't. The emotion, you know, it was all sincere. Like, you could see it, he wanted it probably as much as what he was doing for Hampshire. He stuck around for a couple of hours after the game, even though he's playing in Cheltenham, I think, the next day. So Imran, like, not only a fucking brilliant bowler at club level, up there with, you know, as good as I would have played against, certainly spinners, but an absolute legend of a guy, top man. And he used to come and watch us many years later. We played Wedgwood up at Modishall once, and he was just sitting on the fence at the top, didn't announce himself to anyone. He just moseyed in and watched a bit. So yeah, there we go. Imran Tahir, legend.
Yeah, he is definitely a top bloke, and we have been promised by Ramzan that he will get Imran to come and join us for a podcast at him sometime this summer, hopefully when he's over here for, I think he's over here for the 100, isn't he? Or he should be. So hopefully we'll have Imran on ourselves, because he is a top bloke. He came down after the World Cup to one of our junior training, and I've never seen someone so willing to just chat and help kids. In reality, is an absolute superstar.
Does he chat more than me? Because these answers feel quite long.
No, I mean, I wouldn't say he chats quite as much as you, but we don't mind chat, because that means we don't have to speak. Yeah. But the last thing that we have lined up for you, and we've had lined up for the last couple of guests, is our quick fire round. Now, Joe Leach found this to be a little bit of pressure, surprisingly. But he mustn't have done that bad, because Steve Croft matched him last week. So, dead simple, we'll be quick fire questions. I'll probably take up half the time asking the questions.
Stuttering.
Yeah, exactly. Dude is going to do the timing. God help us.
Have I got to answer them straight away, sort of thing?
As quick as you can. See how many you can get through. See if you can get further than Leach and Crofted.
Basically, you've got a minute to answer as many as you can.
Right. Yeah. So, dude, are you going to do the countdown? We've got a bit of music this week for Jono as well.
I love it.
Go on then, mate. I'll let you count us in.
3, 2, 1, go.
High score.
Mine? 130. Yeah.
Best figures?
7 for 14.
Favourite club ground?
Stone.
Favourite professional ground?
Trent Bridge.
Red ball or white ball?
Red.
Favourite player?
Lara.
Favourite teammate?
Ian Carr.
Favourite food?
Chinese.
Favourite drink?
All sorts. Gin and tonic.
Favourite TV show?
Better Call Saul.
Favourite film?
Big Lebowski.
Favourite band?
Radiohead.
Pre-match song?
Actually, it's Pixies. Change that one. Pre-match song, Tame by the Pixies.
I'll do turn it.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky. With so many options to choose from, how do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes.
Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Down at Man podcast. We're on to the second half now of this week's show. Aid's wetting himself while necking his pink WKD. Yes, he really is a 14-year-old girl on the wall stand to Marsh on a Friday night.
At least I know I'll say down at third man, mate.
Yeah, hey. We have had some difficulty. Welcome to episode
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever it is. You know. Right, we best talk about some more recent cricket, and we'll talk about world cricket and, of course, England versus India. Now, we lost the last T20. Aid wanted to cry about that. And then we lost the first ODI. I think Aid also wanted to cry about that. What have we made of the last couple of appearances from England? Have we?
Shit.
Do we think we've just been... okay, that's fair enough. We went straight to it. Do you think... Shit. Do you think we're just a bit unlucky? India are just really, really good.
Throwing
it away in the live. Distinctly
lack of interest from me as well. Bored. I can't get behind a team that refuses to play the best team. I've now decided. After praising our mental health selection thing, I've now decided that even though that's good, and I will still accept that that's good, I just can't support them fully because we're not picking the best team. So there you go. We were also took proper toss the other day.
Took the ODI?
Yeah, a bit of both, yeah. Scott, to be honest. But the ODI the other day was proper shit. I left work and we were 135-1 and got home and we'd lost.
Weren't we 135-0 off 14 or 130 for none?
Yeah, 135-0 off.
You need to score. 14,
like, not even that, 13, I think.
I think it's between 5 and 5.5 and over. You've got a batting line at the bats to... Well, where did Archer bat?
Wherever Archer batted, that's where
Archer didn't bat. Technically,
2-11. Well, to be fair, he is about as much use on the fucking plane with a bat in his hand. That's all I'll say. Because all I hear, I'd say it again, I've said it every week. All I hear every week is, yeah, he can hold the bat, this lad. He can't. He's wank.
He can swing. He's got a good golf swing, mate. That's what it's about.
But like I said, do we need his 5 and over? How near you, with that batting line, could you not get 5 and over?
Yeah. Morgan was injured, wasn't he? And Billing, he got a split webbing. Yeah. By not the best team, you mean Joe Root not playing, right?
Wokes.
Archer was injured once, he will.
Yeah. Wokes. Archer wouldn't have played, but yeah, Wokes and Root. Yeah. They've got the one-day stuff sorted, though, really. I think it's the T20 stuff that I'm still a bit baffled by some of it.
Okay, Scott, let me pose you a question.
Where are your PVs?
The World T20 is around the corner, which it actually is, to be fair, but we're making an imaginary world here. World T20 is around the corner. You've got to pick a squad tomorrow to play in India. Who's in your team? 1 to 11. Go.
Is Alex Hales allowed to be picked?
Yes, Alex Hales is allowed to be picked in your thing because we believe that he should be picked, so fire away on that one.
So I'll go. I don't think he will be because I think Morgan is so dogmatic. And but I would pick.
Mr. Morgan doesn't want him in, so Mr. Morgan shall not have him.
Mr. or Mrs. Morgan.
There comes a point as well, like if you drag it on for as long as it's been dragged on, that it's very uncomfortable for Hales to come back in anyway. But it's like, yeah, he's going to back Malan all the way. So personally, David Malan, I think his statistics are not bad, but I think there's a story under that, which I feel like a lot of the games he puts a bit of pressure on people. I'm not a fan of Joss Butler opening the batting. So, for me, I would have Hales, Roy, Bairstow, Stokes, Butler, Morgan, Moeen Ali. And then the four bowlers would be Jofra Archer, Rashid locked in, Mark Wood. And then I would pick Chris Wokes.
Interesting.
I like Bairstow at 3. I do like that.
Yeah. So Boothie's been great for them. Wokes, you know, people might say, oh, he's too small, he's too slow or whatever. But, you know, let him swing the ball for two overs in the power play. He bowls not bad at the death. I think I'm not convinced Jordan is as good a death bowler as it seems to be accepted. He's obviously a genius fielder and he's a good lad, good cricketer. But I'm not sure he adds a massive amount of value to the team. And the thing with Butler is I don't dispute that he's the best batsman. And I think there's a sort of logic to saying your best batsman should have as many balls as possible. I think the question should be, where can he add the most value to the team? And I think he is miles better as a finisher than anyone else. Whereas I think we have people who can tee off in the first six overs, not far, if not equal to Butler. So I would have him as a floater and he would come in around the 10th over in every game. And that would be his position, 10th, 12th over. You know, AB de Villiers doesn't open the batting for RCB. He didn't open the batting for South Africa. He was the best T20 batsman in the world, pretty much. And they saw the value of somebody like him who could score 70 off 28, 30 balls at the back end of the innings, where most of the guys couldn't, whereas they could probably get you a quick 40 in the power play sort of thing. I think we've got loads of guys who can do it and not many who could come in, pressure situation. Can you get us 40 off 16 balls and win us the game? And I think Butler's the man to do that. So that's my argument.
So I notice, Scott, there's no place for either Curran brother.
No.
If you're putting Tom Curran in the side, mate, then...
Oh, fuck. Oh, well,
you're not a captain, are you, let's be honest.
I've never known. Scott's touched upon a really important point here, and maybe you've said it far, far more diplomatically than I need to, but... I've never known two people who are supposed to be specialists in the shorter form of the game and specialist death bowlers be at wank in the short form of the game as Tom Curran and Chris Jordan. If your job is to bowl slower balls and Yorkers and you are incapable of bowling a decent slower ball and Yorker, you are not fit for purpose and therefore should not play. If I go to work and I'm not a very good teacher, I do not go into work the next day. I am asked to stay at home because I'm not very good at what I do. If Scott writes a bag of shit, he is not invited to write another article again for that particular publication. And obviously, as the Radio 1 and the BBC would say, there are many publications out there and Scott just has preferences of the ones that he writes for. But there are many competitors if you so wish to buy them. So I will say there's many competitors to the likes of Jordan and Tom Curran and they can happily sit on the bench.
I mean, Sam Curran, if I was a batsman of the opposition, he would be the person I'd target every single game. And I'm not sure he's got the tools to, like, navigate that most of the time. I know his bounce is, what, 82 miles an hour. He does a decent job. But for me, Moeen Ali has to play. Like, if Sam Curran is only... you're only going to get one or two overs out of him because he gets pumped... then, okay, get Moeen Ali in there, who is a miles better batsman in T20 cricket than Sam Curran is. Sam Curran's a very good counter-punching number eight in test cricket when you've got three slips and a gully in and loads of gaps. Moeen Ali, when you've got five men on the fence, is still a dangerous player, particularly in India where people can't put it up his snot box every second ball, not really. So to me, Moeen is an underappreciated cricketer. And he's a fragile soul and he clicks quite quickly. You know, and you look at his figures and he's gone for 28 in that last game and he didn't bowl great. They target him. But, and I know he didn't play most of the World Cup because they ended up getting the fourth or fifth seamer in there, didn't they? Fourth seamer. Fair dues in English conditions. But I would have Moeen in there 9 times out of 10 with 6 because you got 6 bowlers. Yeah. Do we agree with this?
I
definitely agree with you on the Moeen Ali thing. I think even if like you pack the top five with your hitters, like where you know you're like the normal top five where it'd be, and then you have Ali at 6, and then you've also got, even if you need two overs off him, but you probably do want him at 7. But like what you said about Butler is actually quite an interesting thing, because for me, I would probably have Butler opening, but I can't argue with what you're saying. As in, you've literally got Roy will never go on probably and get you 100 because he'll always find a way to get himself out.
Yeah.
But then Bairstow, I think Bairstow is in your top three all day because you just look like what he's doing in the one day stuff. He's the best, you know. What was that stat, Tierney? He's the only batsman to average 50 in one day, isn't
he? Over 50, over 100 strike rate.
Strike rate. So there's no point having him at four. Stokes has got to be in the top four. And then Morgan can go for either five or six, can't he? So,
don't forget that all this team is all put together on the basis that Hales is up at the top. So let's just take out the inconvenient truth that we probably all want in the conversation. Hales is not going to play. So that now leaves you with Roy and AN Other. So the question I would go for is nice guy David Milan, friend of the podcast and friend of everyone. Nice guy David Milan has surely got to come in. So the question is, does he open? Does Butler open? Or does young Johnny Bairstow go up to open and David Milan, nice guy David Milan, come in and bat at three?
I'm going to be really watched here and say, if it was anywhere but India, David Milan comes in, bats three, I have no issue in the world. At the moment, if it was tomorrow in India and he hadn't got the IPL to hone his craft in India, I would be picking Sam Billings or Liam Livingstone to bat in that side ahead of him because I would trust him more in India. I just don't see in India. He looked good in the last game because he played on a flat track that was reasonably fast. I just don't know about him in India. I want him to be successful because I really like the bloke and he's been class everywhere else.
You know, a few lads are saying, oh, we want Billings in as this finisher. Have we actually seen proof that Billings is a finisher?
Big bash, but...
We haven't seen any proof that Sam Billings can actually play consistently for England yet, so never mind.
Against Australia last year when there was no pressure on him because we were getting absolutely dicked, basically. And he scored, you know, he melted it round and whatever, middle overs. But he does, I think his strike rate, I had a look, was like 128, maybe, and he bats middle orders for Kent. You know, he gets the odd game for Chennai, and I don't know. I've never seen him match. He doesn't seem to set the world alight, does he?
I watched a lot of Big Bash, and he was. I must admit, he looked really good in that. But the Big Bash is again Australia, isn't it? I think that's the issue. I can't think of an English player who's particularly done a good job in the middle order in the IPL. Other than Butler, probably.
Butler's going to bat five for Rajasthan, isn't he?
Yes, I would guess so. Stokes is going to.
He was off last year.
So another important thing with the Butler debate is Rajasthan, who you presume have got a massive data team working all this out, don't open with him. They open with Stokes. And the Hales thing, as somebody who has made the same mistakes as Alex Hales at different points in time, I don't like all the fucking sanctimoniousness about it, like he's fucking stabbed someone. He hasn't. He just, you know, he's paid the price. He missed the biggest game.
Just loves drugs.
It's like, I know you can't really compare club cricket to international cricket in any way, but if you've got a lad who's just literally come back and gone 9 o'clock in the morning, and he's like, oh, I've only had an hour of sleep, boys, but you know, I'll be there. And he, you know, he's your best player, and he, no matter if he, how pissed or how drugged up he is, gets you 100. You don't care, do you? You don't care if he's a prick. You don't care about any about that. As long as you win that game, you've won the game, haven't you? That's all you care about.
Well, there is a certain England great of recent times of South African origin who went through that precise scenario in Australia once. I can't really get into the details, but I think, you know, we know he's Piers Morgan's mate. You know what I mean? That guy. And he had one of those types of nights and preparation for the game and in a grade match in Sydney, and he did okay. So, yeah, and I can't go into the details of some of the states I played cricket in the 90s and got through fine, yeah. In fact, one of my best memories was taking a one-handed catch after I was out at Caverswall. I'd got 80. I'd had no sleep the night before, basically come from a party, got on a train, played against Caverswall, got cramp, got out. Housemate had given me one of her ADD pills to straighten things out for the next day. And got myself a pint of black currant at Caverswall, had to wait by the side screen. One of our batsmen hit a straight six. I swapped my pint from my right hand to my left hand, spat my fag out and caught this ball one-handed. And it's like, I got an absolute roar from the Badgers at Caverswall. So, yeah, that was fun. But so, yeah, Alex Sales, man.
Get him in,
yeah. It's a long ball.
That's all that matters. It's a long ball. Gives us some good clips to watch on Twitter. Jolly's at Leavers because he's a busy, busy man as chairman, captain, football referee, teacher. God knows how he does it. So, County Championship, couple of more good signings. I was impressed to see Worcestershire have signed Sandeep Lamishan. I like Lamishan. I think he's a really good bowler. First Nepalese player in county cricket, so I thought that was quite good. Shreyas Iyer signed for Lancs, but then did his shoulder about 3 hours later, so don't know whether that'll... whether it'll actually turn up for them, but a couple of good signings. And then just a little bit of North Staff's news. Bagnall's pro Christy Villian, is it, dude? You always used to now say it.
Yeah, it's on their mind.
couldn't get over from New Zealand, apparently, so they've had to sign a replacement. And they've signed a replacement dude knows a little bit about him, Bilal Bhatti, who I think will be quite scary on Bagnall's bank on a cold day in April, I'll be honest.
That's another game I might have played against you, Scott, actually.
Yes, I played against him at Hemeath.
In the seconds?
Yeah.
Yeah. Me and him opened the bowling, and I can remember he bowled someone, and it just tripped, you know, it just fired past me at third man, and I was just like, yeah, sound. And then I think he eventually took himself off because he was like, I don't want to be bowling, you know.
Do you remember how many I got in that game?
No.
50-odd.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a story about that. I didn't have a clue who he was. He played in the World Cup the winter before, but I hadn't watched any of it. And I saw this Asian guy warming up with you lot, and I was like, who's that then? Who's that? Mm. We fielded first. Our wicketkeeper got injured early in the game, standing up to someone, got one on the inside of the knee. He had to go off. Someone padded up to keep, and Akko came out to field, right? Somebody I played years against. He's now at Mod, obviously. Well, his lad plays for Mod. And Akko's alongside me at second slip. I said, Akko, who's this lad you got pro-ing then today? He says, fucking hell, mate. You know, we're standing here. We've got a lad who's got a little bit of pace, you know, ish, but for that standard. He said, you know, we're standing here now. Well, this is where I'm going to be standing later. And he turned around and walked like 10 yards further back. Said, about here. And I was like, fuck. Okay. Mm-hmm. So at tea, like in the old days when you used to play against quick bowlers, it was all word of mouth, rumour, end of games. You'd play teams. Have you faced him yet? Have you faced him? Now you can fucking look on YouTube, right? So we searched Bilal Bhatti on YouTube. And the first clip of him was bouncing out Mahela Jayawardena on a feather bed. In
Don't
deep
you get him out twice in two balls or something?
Yeah, gets him out with a no ball and then does exactly the same thing. And I'm thinking, I'm fucking 44. I thought I was past all that shit of dealing with quick pros. And I've got like probably five lads in our team who are 15 or younger. And that's when he had to come off in the end. And. Yeah, and I wrote a piece for Crick Info about it, actually.
There's a bit of sad news this week. Wendy Carr from Checkley sadly passed away, so just like to send our condolences over to Andy, Gavin and all the family, all the Carr family and everyone else at Checkley. Right then, club cricket, and we're going to have a little chat about North Staff, so we're going to just quickly have a little loop through the teams A to E, because according to North Staff's website, that's one third of the league. I'm just going to have a quick little loop through some of the clubs from A to E. Just going to go through at what teams they've got, what divisions are in, and sort of any points we've got about sort of the club or the tees. We're going to try and keep it positive so that we don't like insult anyone before the season's even started, because we're already concerned that we're going to come out to bat and someone's going to go, oh, fucking Ali is that twat off the podcast. So I could do without insulting them as well. So First up in the alphabet is All Sager. Now, I'll be honest with you, boys. I've never played at All Sager, but I only have a team in Div 2, a team in Div 5. And I know, dude, that means you'll play against them a bit. So what's All Sager like as a place, as a ground?
It's a nice ground, mate, to be fair. I don't mind playing at All Sager. It's quite a nice ground, decent tees. So yeah, can't really complain.
Anyone to watch out for? Anyone you...
Always have a nice little battle with Gareth Rowe every year.
People can remember that one.
He's been around, good player, mate. Yeah, I'm not sure if they've signed a pro or not, because I think technically he's their, obviously, main man. They're a decent side. I wouldn't say they're going to be up there, but I think, you know, they're a decent side on the day. But yeah, Rowe is obviously the main man to watch out for.
Then next up on the alphabet is Ashcombe Park. Now, Ashcombe have gone up to 3 sides this year, which is fair play to them. They've got obviously the Prem side that we've talked about, got Ross Whiteley playing for them, which is Scott's face there suggests that might be quite interesting. I think
Cheddleton Road isn't a very big ground, so yeah.
If he hits it down that bank as well, you might find train station.
Play them in the cup.
Yeah, you might play them in the cup. Unlucky. They've also got a side in Div 5, and they've got a new side in Div 9, who I believe are going to play at Little Stoke, just to confuse people when they want to go. But Ashcombe, nice enough little ground, and it's a bit cold and late season, I've found before, because it's a bit open, isn't it? But nice little place. I've never had an issue there myself. Don't know about you, boys.
Has Sadiq signed for them as well?
I think so, yeah. I know they have made a couple of good signings from what I've seen.
Yeah, he was a good player when he was trying to be a cricketer. He played at Derby. I played 1 year with him. I played 08 with his brother, Armour. And then we were trying to sign Hamza. You know, he was at Cheadle and he was the next sort of hot shit batsman. And we signed him. His parents run a restaurant, Thornbury Hall Indian restaurant, really swanky place out near Cheadle. And I got the norovirus the afternoon we were going for the meeting. And I spent the whole meeting running to the toilet and fucking farting jets of water out. Basically, I had this really lovely food and, yeah, couldn't sit still for 5 minutes. So that went well. We did sign him, but, yeah, he's a good player. They've got about 3 or 4 ex-Modishall players. The left-arm spinner, his name's just gone from my head. Anish Raza, Irfan Khan, Almer Sadiq plays there, I think. Tom Ball. So, yes.
Yeah, some decent players.
Big grudge, yeah.
Next up is a new entry into the league. I have played him in the Stone and District League in the past, and that's Audlem. Proper little out-in-the-middle-of-nowhere ground. Warning to anyone who's playing there, if you have to jump the fence into the farmer's field to get the cricket ball, please note that the barbed wire isn't on top where you can see it. It's actually on the back of the fence. It turns out when you jump and you use it to vault over, it cuts nicely through your hand, as I found out. Ooh. When fielding there. So just a warning. And I've got a Audlem last week. I did slag off a little bit their tees. They've explained to me that Atik, their Pakistani lad, didn't quite understand what was meant by you're on tees. And so he bought his own tees, and then he thought that he needed to bring one item for tees. So he brought around 10 kilos of melon, which is why they ended up going to the spa to buy sausage rolls and party rings, which is just thought that was quite fair. And I think we've all probably played with someone who doesn't understand the process of you're in charge of tees. I've seen people turn up with... I've seen someone once actually ring me and ask me, how do I make a sandwich? I've got the bread, I've got the filling, and I've got the butter, but where does the butter go? Do I keep the crust bit on? Does that stay? So I think we've all been there, to be fair, at some point along the line. Next up is Audley. Now, one of Dude's many ex-clubs from when he was a junior. They've obviously in Div 1, they've got a few decent players, haven't they, Dude?
Yeah, they've got a few sturdy ones, mate. They've got a few sturdy ones.
Do you want to name any of them?
Well, obviously, you're going to look at Rob Emmons, aren't you? I think he's still skipper, isn't he?
I would assume so, mate.
Yeah, obviously. Lovely ground, lovely changing rooms. Lovely something else back when I used to play there, but we're not
going
to...
Behind the bar, by any chance.
We're not going to mention it, John. they've signed a decent pro, haven't they?
I think so, mate, but...
Supposedly he's rapid, but I can't...
Good research, Danny, by the way. They signed a good player, aren't they? Oh, I don't know.
I've got his name.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, he is now. It's that Ricardo Gordon, isn't it? He's played for Warwickshire. Seamer, quick. Well, he looked, as John who said, he looked quick from the photo.
Yeah. they'll be up there, won't they? They'll be down thereabouts.
Yeah. They've obviously got a team in Div 3. They've also got a team in my Division 7 that's playing out in Fecking Hales, which is like Market Drayton, middle of nowhere, which I'd much appreciate playing at Audley, a nice little ground that's 2 minutes from my house and having trek to the other side of the county line, but so be it. Next up's Bagnell and Norton, who we just spoke about. Obviously, they got their change of pro. They got Bill Albatty in. I've always liked Bagnell Norton, to be fair, just because I know a few people there and a nice bunch. And obviously, they've done well to go from, was it Div 3 all the way up to the Prem. Wormo's done a pretty good job, to be fair to him. I won't give him too much credit, but he might come on the pod in a couple of weeks, so I'll be reasonably nice to him. But yeah, I think Bagnell will be, I think it's their first proper year in the Prem, so big year for them. But they've improved their club masses, and I think they're probably quite a good club to look at and think that's how we get there.
You lounge, haven't they?
Oh, mate, they've got a president's lounge and all sorts. Yeah. Like the Royal Box, mate.
Mm. I'm just worried for people facing Bilal down that bank, mate, if he's still as quick as he was.
Jesus. Any thoughts on Bagnell?
when Bagnell first started to get promoted, I was captain of our twos when it was the first year of the merger, and there was four of us in that battle to go up: Endon, Norton in Hales, Bagnell, and us. And there was a game at Alton where it was a seesaw game, and basically their last pair, number 10 and 11, knocked off the last 10 runs in about 9 overs. It was proper drawn out tense. And had we won that game, we would have been promoted. So it just kind of goes to show, like, they'd invested in that team, and yeah, they'd have spent another year in Div 3, but then just, it was really surprising to see what they did. And you kind of think sometimes, like those four of us were quite good sides, and you kind of wonder what the standard's like a bit higher. And yeah, I'm not sure, not sure Div 2 is all that good, but there we go. So I don't mean to offend the
no
teams pressure. In Div 2.
Yeah, dude, but, you're
no,
shit.
Just trying to say that. I don't think the standard's as good as it used to be, but I think, you know, last year we saw a little bit of an improvement, but we'll see how this year goes.
Moving on to, they've also got a side in Div 4, should just mention that as well, so they're sort of doing well as a club. I think they had a promotion for their twos as well. Next up's Barlaston. Barlaston are in Div 2, Div 4, famed for obviously having Tom and James Taylor come through there. Me and you played against Tom, didn't we, when we were kids, dude, and obviously James played against Smithy, who we've talked about a couple of times on this show, asking Pat Brown where the toilets were and shit like that. But yeah,
well, I think George O'Brook and Jack Davies anyway, because they can both get a big ball.
Yeah, they've got a couple of big hitters in there, and I know Lee Matthews, who plays Fair Ones, nice bloke, good little bloke. I've never actually played at Barlaston, and I've been down hundreds of times, and I've meant to have played them loads of times, but I've always been on holiday when we've played them when we were kids. So I never actually played there, but it seems a nice enough little place.
Yeah, it's better than it was. The old pavilion was an absolute fucking shithole. So the new one, it's not going to win any architecture prizes because it looks like it's been drawn by an 8-year-old with a ruler.
Terry Stiles. Tumble.
But it's a good club, good people. Phil Taylor, James, and Tom's dad is an absolute legend, and Neil Davis, for me, one of the best umpires in the league. Really superb character, good person, and it's just got full of like decent people, Barlaston. So wish him well.
Moving on, we'll go to Betley. So Betley have obviously only got one team down in Div 7. Now, last year they won the shortened Div 7. They were a good team, to be fair. Having played against them, very good team. Lost a couple, thanks to Aidslot taking Adam Simcox off them, and I think Pat Wilkes gone lease it, but I'm sure they'll still be strong. And that's a nice place. I like going there. It might only be a small ground, but it's a nice little ground and lovely people I've always found there. And obviously we had Andy on from Betley, and Yeah, nice little place, Bettley, and I hope that eventually they can get back up to two teams and have a team up in them top four or five divisions, hopefully one day soon or at some point.
Former club of Dominic Cork, of course.
Yes, of course, Dominic.
His pictures used to be all over the place in there. It was like a bit of a church, the church of Dominic Cork going into Bettley back in the day.
The shrine. Next up, Bignall End. I mean...
Shit.
Yeah, absolute shithole. No, kidding. I like Big Lend. We've had a good party in there, haven't we, before now? I remember that.
Yeah, the social side's very good, mate. It's very good.
Yeah. I've been there a few times, but again, never played there. I've been there quite a few. Been there with you when you played for Littlestoke. You one of your many clubs. But I quite like Big Lend. I like the setup, like the lads there. Nice club. You've got a team in Div 2 and a team in Div 4. Do you think you're gonna be up there this year? Or?
Yeah, we're going to win league, mate.
Nah, that's all I'd see.
Well, was it from 4th last year, I think it was. So hopefully this year, you know, we can go a couple better. Got a decent side. Signed a couple players, lost a couple players. But obviously this year we can have a pro. So hopefully it'll be half decent. And, you know. Better be anyway. Be there or thereabouts. So.
Fair enough. Next up's Blythe. Now, Blythe and Div got obviously a team Div 1, Div 5. I'd assume that Blythe are going to be, or would fancy them chances of being reasonably competitive, being at the top few, I would guess, in Div 1. But they've got a few decent players, haven't they, to be fair to them. I know Toby Degu likes to listen and likes to send us the odd comment as. Obviously there, and obviously, how can we forget the fact that he loves to sing something about, what was it, join the gang in the gang? Sounded a bit Gary Glitter, but Blythe again, another nice little ground. And I think they've done had a new clubhouse since the last time I was there, about three or four years ago.
Mm. Also, Toby Degg is better at cricket than he is at drinking pints, from what I've seen during that. means.
yeah, not the best at necking pints. Either of you got any views or stories on Blythe at all?
Oh, I've got a very good story. I don't know if you were there, Turner.
Are you on about when Trigger called you cheating? I think he called you cheating.
Yeah, it was on that board. It was also to do with we needed 10 to win. I was last man. And
obviously, he slapped a couple. You did as well. A couple, mate.
Hero.
And then he was... I've never seen someone be so adamant about an edge that was fucking miles away from
me. Oh, that was it, yeah. I think they got 230-odd, and then we were 220 for 9. I've gone and played and missed. I think I might have clipped my pad. That's where I'm going with, anyway.
To be fair, mate, I was stood directly behind him.
He's proper going forward. The umpire's just gone, not out.
Yeah, I've never seen someone pull the top off in celebration without actually checking with the umpire first. Yeah. It was the ultimate celeb appeal, and I'll be totally honest, I don't know what he was appealing for, because I was behind it, and I remember... sitting there, and I might have been sat with Greg Prime, and I said to him, he ain't got near that, he ain't gonna give that. And we were quite worried that he was gonna give it, the umpire was gonna give it just because of his reaction, but fucking good job he did.
And I clapped you for 4 when the game makes sense.
Yeah, I thought you'd want to mention that bit.
No, the ground has improved quite a lot, obviously. They've had a good set of lads and good team for the last so many years, haven't they? But the ground
and
the clubhouse has come on
quite a bit. Burslem's up next. Burslem obviously in the Prem, and then down in Div 6 for the twos. Obviously Burslem, good team, aren't they, to be fair? I've got a few decent lads there that I know, that I've sort of spoke to, know of. And then obviously they've got Zen Malik joined them. I'm assuming Zen's going to do a pretty good job with bat for them, you would think, wouldn't you, from what I've heard about him. So I'd assume they may be not pushing for the title, but I'd guess they're going to be hoping for at least mid-table.
I think they've had the change rooms done up as well, haven't they?
Yes, they've had them extended, haven't they? And they've been working as a COVID test centre, so fair play to them for that.
Well, I played the first season that they moved to that ground, and the square just hadn't bedded in. We were already promoted. We get to the ground and there's this 6'5" West Indian on the square, and they didn't have a 6'5" West Indian in their team. Turned out it was Franklin Rose, who played 20 tests for the West Indies, quick, whatever. And I got out. They got 110. He got 70, 80 of them, slogged it. And I, Addo, very kindly allowed me to open the batting, and he slid down to three. The first two balls, one went through the top, one rolled, supposedly short ball. Third ball, back of a length, should have come about nipple high, hit the stump about a third of the way up, knocked it a long way out. And I walked off past Addo and just said, good luck, pal. Dave Follett, one of their legendary players, he was there watching. He was playing for Northants or Middlesex at the time. I was like, they were a proper aggressive club, like, but quite welcoming in the bar afterwards. You know, you'd get barracked by Burslem as much as any other club. Longton and Burslem were the two where you got shit off the supporters. And I kind of enjoyed it. I like the sort of bear pit kind of atmosphere there. And some good people there. Chris Lowndes, legend. Michael Brown, one of the best cricketers in the North Staffs League for 15, 20 years, I reckon. Brilliant bowler. A lot of time for them.
Next up, we've got Caverswell. Caverswell, obviously, in Div 2 and Div 5. I like Caverswell. Nice little ground. Nice little pine sat in the sun. And I'm going to make sure I go and watch it. Well, assuming I'm not playing one Saturday, maybe go watch them in T20 because they have got bigger Rack Thomas playing for them. The score of the world's quickest T20 century, was it?
Definitely confirmed to be signed.
Can you stop being scared about it just because he's in your division and he's going to put you into next week?
I'll put him into next week, don't worry.
I hope so. But I'm excited to see him. And Caverswell, lovely place, lovely people every time. Good champ, Jenny Moore, great people. I've always liked going down Cav, to be fair. Last year, Rob King, actually, you mentioned earlier, played a game for them because they were short, and fucking hell, he could fucking bat for a third team game on a Sunday. Jesus. I was glad when he got out. Jeez.
King, he went on deal or no deal once, and he had $7,000 in his what he gambled, and came away with a tenner, I think. So,
I wish I'd knew that when I was stood wicket keeping behind him. Fucking hell.
Another Rob King story is he once shat himself playing a forward defensive shot early doors. He'd had a dodgy curry the night before and got a stride in and, yeah, fucking coated the inside of his thighs and carried on batting, obviously, but stunk the gaff out. I think he possibly made silly point but field a little bit further away than he would have liked to. Top man, wow. Kingy. Good player as well. Really good player. Proper player.
Next up's Cheadle. Cheadle, obviously another Prem team, another side who I imagine will be fancying the chances, will be quite high up there. They've got that Ali Khan, who I'm told it's a big, big ball dunty dude.
Massive.
Wow. Massive ball. So they've got Ali Khan. Trigger's there, actually, isn't he?
Yeah,
Trigger's there. They've got some good players, and I think they'll be quite strong, but whether they quite have enough to be challenging for titles, another question, I guess. They've got a second team in Div 3 and then another team down in Div 8, who I believe are going to play up at the Pavilion in Oakmoor. Is it one of the old ground up Oakmoor? So I'll be interested to see what that looks like, because I always remember the first time I went to Oakmoor, I didn't have a fucking clue where I was going, and I pulled in on there, and I was like, why is there a bouncy castle in the middle of the square? And it turned out that it was now like being used as some cafe and rented out or something, but fucking confused laugh out of me. Checkley also in the Prem. Obviously, again, Checkley got some good players. They're the ones who've obviously got, is it three different lads who've played county or minor counties? They've got
Met Lordle's looking very strong.
Yeah, they've got James Kettlebrough, who's from Berkshire. They've got Simon Guy, who's the keeper batsman from Yorkshire. And then they've got Scott Alstone, haven't they? And Scott Alstone's obviously been a good first class batsman, so I think they might put up a fair few runs this season, to be fair to
him. I played with Scott Elston in Nottingham for a season. He was 16. I played a pre-season friendly with him, and he hit this ball and was calling for three, and I only ran one. Like, he basically almost finished the second run, and I just said no. So he's one of the best fielders I've ever seen. I don't know what he's like now, because it's now 15 years later, and he'd be 30, early 30s now, bloody hell. But yeah, unbelievable fielder, Scott Elston. And he fielded in a test match for England, didn't he? Came on as 12th man and took a catch at Trent Bridge. So yeah, top guy. Good club as well, Checkley. Proper people. Used to love batting there, man. One of the best pitches in the league. Didn't bounce that much, so you could just kind of hit through. Decent bowlers. As long as they weren't too tall, get on the front foot and hit through it.
Yeah, I like Chatley, nice ground. We got play there. We ended up playing him on the Sunday because we couldn't play at Denston on the Saturday or something, so we had to play on the Sunday at Chatley. Don't know where they're playing this year, though. Last year, they played at Swinnerton for their third team, should I say, sorry. And fucking hell, I've never played a game of cricket that was so wet in all my life. We shouldn't have played, but because it was the first game after lockdown, we just, like, played anyway. We were just like, fuck it, we're going to play, even though it's absolutely hammering it down all day. And it was one of the worst games of cricket I think I've ever been a part of, just because it was fucking... We may as well have been playing in the middle of a swamp. It was horrendous, but fair play. Nice enough bunch. Got to give them that. Next up's Church Eaton. Joined the league a few years ago, didn't he? They're in Div 6 and Div 8. I've always found them a nice bunch. Could maybe do with clearing out all the cobwebs and spiders out of the away changing room from the other year. Because I'm pretty sure some of that stuff should have been in Chester Zoo and not in Church Eaton. But nice little place. Small in terms of boundaries. But I've always quite enjoyed playing Church Eaton, to be fair to them.
I've played there a couple of times when I was at Wedger and they were in Div 3. I also remember we had a 2020 day and I think it was us, Church Eaton. I think it was four teams. We were at Sandyford and I can't remember who the other team was, but they were quite a decent... They were either Div 1 or Prem. And that, have you heard of Crystal Maestri? I think his name is.
I've heard the name.
Yeah, he come out and he got 101 of them in the 2020 and got 90 in the other. We were all like, fucking hell. Fair play to him. But I think he ended up staying there for a couple of years and then I don't know really where he went after that.
Yeah. But yeah, nice bunch. Looking, not playing them this year. They dropped down the league after we played them last year. I captained and we won. And I... it like 30 there, so fucking hell.
Yeah.
That's the reason I like that place. It makes a change. I hit runs, I took a catch, I was captain, we won. It's like a miracle day that. Crew, I quite like Crew's ground. Nice clubhouse, best tees in the league, I'm going to call it now. I love their tees. But they're in Div 3, and then Div 8. Yeah, nice, but again, nice bunch, nice bit big ground in it. Obviously, it's got the hockey and everything as well, but. I'd say best tees.
I used to hate playing at Crewe. And it's nothing to do with the ground, and it's nothing to do with the actual players. It was more to do with it used to be the same track, you know, that they play on all season because they'd got... I can't remember what Crewe's name. Oh, but they got George Harding and they
George
got this...
George Harding, yeah.
Got this other lad, their pro.
Masood or something
yeah,
like
that? Yeah, something like
that. Old guy, but like... Yeah. Spinners
and they bowled 27 and 28
Shaheed Mahboob.
That was it. Yeah. 27 and 28 overs each. So even if they got 120, you're not winning, let's be honest. You know, when you played them anywhere else, it was a decent game because they didn't really turn you much and whatever. But when you played there, it was like if they get a decent score of batting first, because I think that's what they tried to do because they backed them two to bowl them out. But I think they both took them up. And I don't know if George Harden then got a contract somewhere, and then the pro left.
Wanted some.
Yeah, then the pro left. Then they just come straight back down, then didn't they? But he had a year last year, didn't he, George Harden? There.
Yeah, he's playing for Stone this year.
Yeah, Stone. We played against.
I'm not a fan of any grounds that are completely open, and like you can smash a four, and you have to get a taxi to fetch the ball. I mean, I want something to stop the ball once it crosses the boundary. And I don't like sitting fucking 40 yards from the boundary either. When
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
And you're just in a bench and there's no shade. So for me, they haven't... It's got potential, but they need to put some trees around the boundary, some fencing or something, and, you know, sort it out, Crew, yeah. Basically.
Put some seating or something decent.
They don't give a shit how good your tees are. Give me some fucking shade when it's 30 degrees.
Right, next up is Ecclesall. Ecclesall in Div 1 and Div 3 had a few promotions, haven't they? Miles Coughlin did a great job, and he was bat. Did he hit something daft like 3 tons in a row or something last year? He did a very good job.
I remember he said, didn't he? He got like a 60 or 70, and he said that was a failure. I was like, I think they'll go this year.
I like that ground oven in the church.
One thing I hated doing was chasing players who were playing hard to get, and fucking Miles Coughlin, nice guy, I would say hello to him tomorrow, but man, he got on my tits when I was trying to sign him. He's, you know, flirting like constantly. In the end, I just said, fuck that, I can't be arsed. You're decent, but got better shit to get on with. So, he's a good player, and I think if he'd have. I don't think he's ever played Premier League, has he? I wouldn't have thought so. As talented a player as him, at the time of life he is, that's a bit of a crime for me.
I think they'll go up this year, I do.
Yeah, they've got Jack Fowler, haven't they, who you've played with?
Yes, Jack Fowler, yeah. Legend, mate. Legend, that man.
Oh, yeah. I know him.
Loves a drink. I've got a very good story about him, but I'm not sharing.
Save that for when we get someone from Eccleston on them, mate.
I think they'll go up, but I think Miles did have trials at Derby or played for Derbyshire 2s at one point, like younger days, but I don't know what happened there, but very good player, and he's a handy bowler as well, actually.
I've never seen him bowl, but after the merger with Alton, the Alton lads all speak really highly of him, you know. That was in the days when Wahab Riaz and randoms like this were proing in the league, and he would make runs against that level of bowling. So, yeah, a real
coach. Yeah, he coaches. He works for Staffs and Chance to Shine, doesn't he, and stuff. And I think he does a bit of under-15s or something, doesn't he? I think.
Yeah, and Eccleshill's a rich little market town, so you can imagine he's on a pretty good gig there with loads of middle-class MILFs sending their kids down for a bit of training with Miles, and he might even get involved with said MILFs, who knows, creating a kind of soft porn scenario where you know, like the tennis club pros of old, where it's the cricket club pro. Would you like some one-on-one coaching later? Bring the lad down. Yes, I'll sort him out. You know, etc. That might happen. I don't know, that's all speculation. Sorry, Miles, if you're listening. I'm not suggesting you're boning the parents of the young Eccleshill players. But I'm not ruling it out either. Let's just be clear.
moving on from that. Alwyth, Div 1, Div 4. I've never played at Alwyth, but I'm told they're a lovely bunch from when our lads played a cup final up there against them a couple of years ago. And I'm told that they're just a nice, good bunch from, obviously, Cheshire, most Cheshire-based team, I guess, aren't they, out of them all? What I'm assuming, Dude or Scott, you might have played them sometime along the way.
I've played them a few times. When they had the good old Raj Kumar, mate, he'd get a few runs. It's a nice ground, actually. You know, the first and the seconds are both very good sides, aren't they? Mm-hmm. And, you know, look, it's quite packed, actually. Middle of summer down there, and it's... You get some decent crowds, actually, and yeah, they've got a very good side, and I think they're another team that'll do well this year.
Yeah, they're a good club. They produce their own players, and they're quite loyal. The players are quite loyal to them. You know, someone like Russ Ballard, he went away for a long time, but he's gone back. The left arm spinner is a really good bowler. When I faced him when he was young, Steve Morgan. Yeah, and then he went to Yorkshire. He played for a good club in Yorkshire, Wakefield Thorns. But my main memory of Elworth is when we won the league in 2005, and I nearly got banned in the game because of the game. And there's one umpire that I never saw eye to eye to with, whose name rhymes with Teeth Feely.
I think we worked out.
Okay, good. And we had several incidents over the years. There's one time he walked down to the square at Checkley and announced that Scott Imran Tahir may not bowl for the first half an hour of the game because he'd bowled a practice ball on the square within half an hour of the start. And instead of just saying, Scott, can you stop him from bowling? He had to assert his authority. So me and him were like that. And then this game at Elworth, we're on for the title. We've had a bit of a collapse and we need about five to win. And our young lad, number 10, goes in. And I just know if it hits him on his pads, it doesn't fucking matter where it is, Keith Healy will give him out. I know it. And I said to Joe Woodward, went to Meerith afterwards, stay leg side of the ball, mate. Stay leg side of the ball, use the bat. I don't care if you show him all three stumps. First ball hits him on the thigh pad. They don't even appeal, and Healy's finger is up. So our number 11, Sean Bryan, has to go in. And Sean is like random. He rates himself much higher, but he managed to pump this straight four to get us over the line. We win the game. Everyone's coming off. And I'm just so fucking annoyed. I make a beeline for Healy. And right in front of the pavilion, in front of, I don't know, 70, 80 people, they say, you can't fucking help yourself, can you? What do you mean? I said, you've got to get involved. You've got to spice it up. Make it dramatic for yourself. Getting off on it. And anyway, that went on and he reported me to the league and I had to write this fucking fake apology letter to them saying, yeah, sorry, respect the umpires, won't do it again, whatever. And yeah, just one of those guys who trips on power and being the centre of attention. The guy whose name I haven't mentioned. Lawyers, if you're listening.
It's a bit like a Keith Lard moment, that. Not saying his name, but it's very close. Now, last up in this week's section is Endon. Div 1, Div 6. Had a couple of promotions there. First, didn't they, over the last couple of years. I've always enjoyed playing there, to be fair. Never been there, though. I think every time I play there, it's rained, though, which has been disappointing, because I can imagine it's quite nice on a sunny day, to be fair.
Oh, no. I remember turning up Arthur for a game there.
God, always good.
Did I ever tell you that story, actually?
No.
It was at Little Stoke. And on the I'd been out on the Friday, and I'd had about an hour's sleep. So on the Saturday, I said, no matter what, if we win, I'm not going out. They were like, all right, no worries. We battered Sandyford, I think. Rolled him for like 60 or something. We'd got 250 or something stupid. And then after the game, you have a couple of pads in the bar, don't you? You go, yeah, I'll probably go home, man. And they're like, no, we're going out. I'm like, yeah, sound, fuck it, we're out, let's go. Get out, get back at like 5 in the morning, something stupid like that. Set an alarm, because obviously it's T20 day, so I think the first game's at like, half 10 or something stupid. Set me alarm, must have slept straight through it. I'm in Stone, and we've got to go all the way Endon. And I literally wake up and it's fucking 12:30. I'm thinking, bollocks. I just turned up as we'd finished batting. I was thinking, it's all right, opening bowler, I'll get a go. Here he goes, fucking get yourself on that boundary. I was like, down the bank as well, piss wet through. I was like, fuck's sake. Got all the, I think Wood Lane were playing there as well, all their lads were like, have a good night last night, mate. Yeah, come on, give me all the grief you want. We got battered.
Good stuff.
That's how it should be. Right then, I think it's time we get into our last part of the podcast, and that is, of course, Room 101. Now, I'm sure that Steve Croft will be delighted to know that everyone agreed with him. Literally, every single vote went to get rid of the late starts. Let's start cricket on a Saturday a bit earlier so we can all have a few ales after the game. So, well done to Steve Croft there. He's got it spot on, it seems. And this week's will come from this week's guest and Scott. So, Scott, what would you like to throw in the club cricket bin forever and ever and ever?
I was going to say umpires that like to be the centre of attention. It's probably been covered, that. But I reckon, and this is interesting because I write this column, right, for Wisden, the club debate. So in theory, I could write a column about this and sort of push it with the ECB. I've got a chat to the head of recreational cricket for the next column, I believe, if they ever get back and arrange it. But the thing I would put in is people of 21 years of age or younger who have played for multiple clubs, and I'm talking like four, five clubs by that age, I would say you can only move a certain number of times within a five-year period. Let's say two. And if you want to move a third time, you've got to go outside of the league for that transfer before you can come back in. Because otherwise, there is no incentive really for clubs to develop lots of good under-17s players if they don't really get much back from them when they're starting to turn into cricketers that actually can do the business in decent cricket, right? That's my thing. Kids who fucking move too much. How about that?
we'll go with that.
We have spoken on them sort of lines, haven't we, like the last couple of weeks? We've had some decent chats about that, actually, haven't we?
Yeah. Joe Leach and Steve Croft both talked very well about it as well, to be fair, didn't they? Which was interesting coming from, obviously, pro cricketers talking about it and talking so well about it and how they didn't agree with it either, which was interesting. Right, well, I think, boys, we'll leave it there for this week. As always, big, big thanks to, obviously, Aidan and Johnny for joining me, but also to our guest, Scott, for giving us a different opinion, being some really interesting and being able to talk about some interesting stuff from before. Obviously, I guess we were really playing, weren't we, dude? Or we were playing juniors anyway. But great to hear some stories about Emmy and obviously the story about Shankar, which I love. That classic. So big thanks to Scott. Thank you for coming on. Hopefully at some point we'll try to get you back on to talk us maybe through the next part of the Shankar saga.
Yeah.
Big thanks to everyone who's listening, of course, and a big thanks to Woodstock for supporting us. Make sure you get on to their website and use our discount code. As always, please, please go and follow us, go and subscribe to us, give us a share. One thing that I've learned this week is apparently all these listens we get doesn't actually make that much difference to the podcast charts. What we need is subscribes and reviews and ratings. So if anyone can give us some of them, that'd be class, because we are top 20 in cricketing podcasts in the UK, top 10 in Ireland, and top 40 in India and Australia, magic somehow. But we'd like to maybe get top 10 in the UK, even if it's just for one day at number 10, I would take it, to be fair. So if you can give us a rate or a review or subscribe, that'd be mint. And of course, we've still got our bat stickers and donation page open for cardiac risk in the young. So any support for that would be brilliant. Next week, we are joined by James Butler, the Cricket Badger, as he is known, famous for his podcasts, to talk about the IPL, do a bit of a preview of the IPL. I'm sure James knows a million times more about the IPL than us three do, so it'll be a lesson for us as much as anyone listening. But that should be really good, because James is a lovely guy, and I've loved being a part of his Cricket Badger podcast of late, the England ones and the Big Bash ones, so I'm sure that'll be a really, really good episode. But yeah, we're done for this week. We hope everyone has a really good weekend, good week. And obviously, we'll be back training next week, some of us. So have a good time, guys. And cheers for listening.
Woo! Down at Third Man, the Cricket Podcast, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.